You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome back to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast, the coffee man himself. He's a bit of a coffee bean to all of us because he wakes us up in the morning. You like that intro?
That sounds great. Hey, how are you guys doing?
Dude, it's been a while. What has been in the books, man, since we last talked?
There's been everything going around the world in coffee. We got a lot of the changes that we started talking about last time. With the changes in patterns, especially now, obviously, with, you know, we've got it's still a pandemic, but, you know, there's a lot of things that have changed as far as, like, you know, when we last spoke till today. We got, you know, vaccines rolling out, people starting to go out a lot more. You know, a lot of that has changed and a lot of that is still affecting coffee. For farmers here in El Salvador, we got a lot of different things that are affecting them right now. We were just talking about, we have a 5-year price hike in coffee right now. So that's why, you know, my morning has been crazy. It was crazy yesterday. It was even crazier today. You know, just to put it in an example, you know, I sold part of my coffee harvest at about 3 months ago, and it was at $150 per bag. Now it's at $200 per bag. So that's a $50 price hike. And you can imagine how many coffee bags are produced around the world. That's massive.
So wait, so that's really good for you, but why is that such a dramatic increase? Is it because of the consumption of coffee is becoming more, or is it the fact
there are many things that affect it. All my work in my master's, I mean, my coffee master's was around looking at what really affects the price of coffee. One of it is obviously like how much coffee is there in the ports of the consuming countries, how much coffee is there in the producing countries, and what's happening in the biggest producers, right? And the big hike is because of Brazil. Brazil dominates coffee production worldly by a huge margin. And what's happening right now is they're having a really bad frost. So I've been talking with people from Brazil recently, and they've been saying, you know, 15% of my crop is gone. It's still not a huge number, but let's just play around and think, okay, 15% of the world's coffee population, let's say as an example, of the coffee producer around the world is gone. So that's huge. So that's why we're seeing this huge increase in price. So what I'm doing right now is actually I'm selling like crops ahead of time. So I'm selling my crop of 2023 and my crop of 2024 already. Not all the crop, like half the crop that I'm hopefully gonna get, just because I want to secure this price. This price hike,
it's not going to last, but what, for instance, like if you're selling future crops, what happens if that future crop gets messed up? Is that money that you're going to have to pay back or owe?
Yeah, obviously. So the way the policy that, you know, everyone kind of, cause it's a gamble at the end of the day, right? Yeah. You're gambling that you're going to have this much coffee by the end of 2023, the beginning of 2024, when it's the harvest here in El Salvador. So you're basically gambling on that. The way I do it is I take, you know, my yearly average of the crop over the last 10 years, and I gamble with half. So I just do half. I sell half the crop, and then once I'm already harvesting, I get a better idea of how much is it going to be, if it's going to be lower or higher, and then I can sell more coffee.
Does that ever get nervous that you're basically gambling on the fact that you got to make sure nothing happens to your crops or no disasters happen?
Yeah, but I live in El Salvador, man. Everything's a gamble in here.
It's been strange because, like, I know how the interesting thing is, I've been listening to a lot of studies about like psychedelics. They did this test where they test psychedelics on spiders, and like from LSD, cocaine, all these different types of things. But then they tested coffee on them as well. And the one drug that's the most legal, which is caffeine, happens to be one of the worst ones out there when it came to like these spiders and their sporadic patterns of making a web. And it's like, coffee is an addicting thing. I mean, that's what I thought the price was driving up for, was we need our coffee. And if you're saying that one of the biggest coffee producers just lost 15% of like their, or a giant chunk of it was lost to frost, people are going to start panic buying it because of the fact that there might not be able to get enough coffee. I mean, we had that giant ship that got stuck in the middle of the channel. Oh, yeah. Then everyone was losing their shit. But now, did that affect you at all?
I mean, it affected everyone. Cause I mean, one of the things that we're also seeing right now, and I think part of it is that we shut down our economy for a long period of time, like the world's economy. And, you know, you can't just, you know, turn things off and flip the switch back up and expect everything to be normal. So we're seeing a lot of hyperinflation. I mean, and that's scary to me. You know, I've been building stuff at the farm recently, some structures that I need built. The price of steel is double what it was last year. The price of materials, everything is going up. And it's not just from El Salvador. It's going worldly, I think. I talk to a lot of friends that I have in around the world, and they're telling me, you know, they're still seeing this inflation. But going back to what you're talking about, with the spiders, it's really fun that you mentioned that, because caffeine actually in the plant evolved to be a natural pesticide. So the way that caffeine, the plant thinks about caffeine and produces caffeine as a pesticide. So that's why if you go and see in coffee plantations around the world, you know, there's very little or a few species of bugs that actually chew on the leaves of coffee or damage the coffee trees. It's because of that, because of caffeine. It's a natural pesticide that coffee trees have. There's just a couple of bugs that have special mechanisms that have ways to deal with caffeine. The biggest one for us here in El Salvador, it's called a bean borer, and it has a special enzyme in its mouth. It's just a really, really, really tiny bug. It's got a special enzyme in its mouth, which can help it deal with, you know, get the caffeine, the natural pesticide of the tree. So it makes a hole in the bean, and then that bean's no good.
Now, so I understand with everything shutting down too, that's probably a good reason why like coffee prices are also going to be a little bit up there too, just on the factor of like everybody wants coffee, but it's a lot harder. But is now the pricing for shipping and all that as well too, like trying to ship overseas or trying to export, that has to increase as well too, because I'm guessing they're going to tack on a fee when it comes to like sanitization, when it has to go over to the other country. And it's like, well, hang on a second. Are you really sanitizing it, or are you just looking at it saying it's a sanitation and tacking on another fee?
I mean, I'm not so involved in the shipping aspect of coffee, but I bet there has to be. I mean, you know, the people that ship the coffee, all of their costs are going up, so they gotta have an excuse for their costs to go up, right? So if you are getting charged more for your raw materials, for gas that's been going up in price as well, I mean, you're going to have to find a way to share that with the people, your customers, right? So charge to get your prices up as well, right? So your margins are not affected that much.
You're not even necessarily making that much of a profit if your bags went up $50, because you still got to, now you're able to kind of cover your ass when it comes to paying the fees and all the stuff now that everything has cost a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, at the end of the day, it's not like, you know, I'm gonna, next time we talk and I get paid, I'm gonna have like gold chains and a grill.
I was picturing that. Literally, but, when you sent me a message, I was picturing that all too.
So, but you know what, what we do is save a lot of money, because if you grow coffee here in El Salvador, there is no way you can get financing. I mean, the people that process it have financing, the people that deal in coffee, have financing, the people that ship it have financing, but growers, is very hard to get financing. And the reason for that is that you don't have anything in the eyes of a financial advisor or the eyes of a bank, you don't have anything that is valuable for them to take if you don't repay. So, you know, I have a piece of land, a remote piece of land in a mountain, you know, that the only thing that basically it can grow is coffee. Because, you know, if you try and grow corn or beans in there, okay, you can do it, but that's, you know, it rains in here in El Salvador 4 months. So you got work for 4 months, and then the rest of the months of the year, you got nothing because it doesn't rain, right? So, you know, if you don't grow coffee in those mountains, there's very little that you can grow. Number one, because of the rain, that's big on growing your food, right? And the other one is how remote it is. And it's a mountain. It's not, you know, level land. So it's very hard to substitute it with another crop. So if you're the guy at a bank that approves loans, and you see this guy that has a piece of land that the only thing you can take away from him that has more value is just this piece of land remotely, which, you know, can only grow coffee, and it's pretty hard to grow it, and you're not going to give him a loan, right?
Yeah, I think the priority, probably for a lot of people, at least the benefit that they should have pulled out of during the pandemic, or at least during lockdown, was all this isolation that we had, was not only just to think about oneself, but also to think about ways to improve your situation that you're in too, try and budget your finances and trying to find ways or new opportunities to make money. I mean, during the pandemic, you were sending me videos and collaborations that you were doing, and amazing pictures of your farm and things of that sort, saying there's a projects that you're working on. And I'm like, yeah, it's perfect. The perfect time to expand out your business by trying to market it out there. So when it does open back up, you have a chance to come out with like a new fresh hit.
Yeah, I definitely took some time when I was alone. It was kind of tough for me because I was stuck in America. I was there from March till August because here in El Salvador, they weren't allowing anyone to get in at first. And then you had to quarantine in places designated by the government. They were trying to do their best, but still the conditions weren't really good. And I was with my mother. My mother is, you know, she's 65. So I wasn't going to put her through, you know, this massive quarantine place. So we stayed there from March to August 10th is when we came back here in El Salvador. So, you know, it was really isolated because I was over there in Florida, trying to manage as much as I could from over there. I'm trying to see the back end. I was working a lot on the client facing things of my farm. I've been working, I'm not that old, even though my knees feel and my back feel pretty old, but, I've been working coffee now for 15 years. I think I got the production side of it. At least I'm understanding what I'm doing, you know, wrong, and starting to work on it. There's still definitely a lot of things that are very complex, but the client facing aspect of our business, I think, was lacking. So I took some time during when I was away to try and see how I can do things better.
Are you worried about, since, you know, Brazil's having a frost, are you worried about anything like weather-wise happening to your farm? Like, it seems like it's kind of going around in shifts right now. Like, China had tornadoes, which is rare for over there. Us over here, I mean, we've had some pretty crazy natural disasters in the past couple of months. It seems like the world's kind of going through this weird shift.
I mean, it's always worrying, right? Because, you know, what we're trying to do, what we're working on, is trying not have all of our eggs in one basket. At the end of the day, I have to, you know, my job is to put, you know, food on the table, right? So I'm trying to diversify to other things, both in agriculture and non-agricultural, just because, you know, I don't want to have, you know, everything in coffee. Because although it's what I've done, I've worked most of my life, the thing that I have most experience in, I don't want to just have that. And then if some, you know, disaster happens, then everything's gone.
Like the world stops drinking coffee.
Oh, well, hopefully that never happens. But, you know,
that's impossible, man. That's not going to happen.
We're too addicted to caffeine now. So, but, you know, I'm really biased. Of all the things you could be addicted to, I think caffeine's not that bad.
What would you go for if you couldn't do coffee anymore? Like, what would you expand out to?
So what I'm looking into is, so the bell peppers, you know, how bell peppers, tomatoes. That's what I'm trying to see if I'm doing like a greenhouse to grow those. So that's actually what I'm building, some greenhouses to grow all those things. But recently we've been starting looking at real estate as well. But everybody knows the problem with real estate is that, you know, you got an asset, you can't move, right? So it's just stuck there. You know, in Latin America, if there's anything that happens, you know, that you got war, you got the economy go south, you can't move that asset, still there, right? And yeah, so that's the problem with it. And you need a lot of money to get into real estate, right? Because buildings are expensive, right? So yeah, that's what I've been looking into. It's not as fun as growing coffee, but still, if it makes money, you know, I'm not going to say no to the good old US dollars, man.
Yeah. I figured it, like, since you said you only have one farm, why wouldn't you just expand out and get a second one and just do something else on the second one? So you still have your maintaining source of income, but at the same time, you could dabble in some other things as well too.
Mm-hmm. So, and the thing is, here in El Salvador, the best coffee growing regions, the land is expensive. Looking into it as well, you would have to replant all of those farms, because a lot of them have been abandoned and nobody has worked in them for a long time. So let's say, for example, if you got, let me convert this because into American.
Oh, geez.
Because I'm thinking in meters and you guys do miles. Do different. Let's see. Meters to square. Okay. Let's see, meters to square.
Don't ask for feet. My help. I failed math 3 times.
Oh, okay.
You want to talk about the corporational madness that goes on? I could talk about that, but I can't talk about the math number part.
Hey, everyone's got their niche, just like coffee. So let's say I plant around 4,000 trees every 7,000 square inches. So, and it cost me around $4 to plant every tree, you know, and my farm is half a square mile. So it's a big investment.
How much do you get off of one tree?
This is the thing, you have to wait 3 years to get your first harvest.
Oh, Jesus, I don't like the waiting game on that one.
Yeah, buddy. So the way people do it here, when, you know, there's two ways to think about it. You can either look at a part of your farm and say, this part's not too good, it's getting old, and you replant the trees that are bad. Or the way I do it is that I leave it when I see a part of the farm is bad, I just leave it and leave it and leave it until it gets to a point of no return. And then I cut everything down and replant it completely. So, and then I'm replanting bits and pieces when I need it. So that way the cost is not so big and I don't have to wait 3 years for the entire farm to start producing, right? I just have to wait 3 years on that little plot.
Our California in the States, I don't know if you guys have gender reveals down there, like where they hit a ball in the
air.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we're close to America, so everyone's doing the whole, like, you got to fume the color of your baby and things like that.
So. Well, so the gender reveals, they are causing a lot of fires that are happening in California. Yeah. So California is, again, in another severe drought to the point where they're getting these what they call water witches to be able to try and find water in the ground using two metal rods.
No, you're kidding me with that.
Scientists have literally turned to that because, like, we don't know what to do. We're at our breaking point. So they're not finding anything. But at the same time, like, rice is produced down there, lettuce, a lot of main agricultural stuff. And it's going through one of the worst droughts. And it's like, we need to find a better way and more effective way to make sure that, first of all, agriculture is more stable. I mean, when you said that the bags of coffee went up a price, my first initial thought was the fact of, like, a lot of corporations have been, Nestle was a big one. They have really bad labor laws. Like, I mean, they pay their workers shit. And they went to the Supreme Court over a court case and they were like, whatever, we don't see anything wrong. And they pass it over and everyone was like, what? And they don't realize the chocolate industry is probably one of the most corrupt out of them all. And it goes with the same thing with some coffee industries too. I figured that they were going to pay you guys more for your coffee on the concept of, like, during the pandemic, all the hardships that you guys went through. But then if you look at it from a sailor's perspective, nobody wants to pay more. Everybody's trying to find the cheapest deal.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that, you know, it's going to continue to happen. And, you know, nobody wants to pay for coffee. So, you know, as far as, like, for the growers, so it's very hard to grow high quality coffee when you're barely, you know, getting through. You know, for us, since I think the last time we saw prices like these were around 2010, 2011. Mm-hmm. So that's when it got up to, like, almost $300. That actually, we saw the, you know, coffee really good. That's actually what allowed me to go to school in America. So us selling that coffee really good was the reason why we had saved enough for me to go to college. But yeah, I mean, nobody, you know, we've had low prices for a long time. And, you know, I don't think the prices here in Brazil are, you know, what's happening now is going to keep the prices high for a long time. I think it's going to be momentarily. That's why I sold my harvest ahead of time. So it's not going to fix the problem of, you know, growers not getting enough for their crops, and ultimately hurts the quality of coffee.
So you only sold how long it takes to grow another tree, because that's, if the frost destroyed that much, that means it's going to take, what, 3 years or 4 years to be able to grow another tree?
That's like, the 3 years is for here for El Salvador. I mean, Brazil is a whole different game. They manage their coffee differently. I've talked to people in Brazil and they can get their coffees producing before the 3 years.
How?
So, well, it's just it has to do with everything, the way they manage it. Here in El Salvador, we grow our coffee under shade. They do it at full sun. And also a lot of it has to do with the different species and the different varieties of coffee that they grow. So, you know, in here in El Salvador, we only grow varieties of Coffea Arabica, which is one of the commercial species. Brazil has both. They grow Coffea Robusta and Coffea Arabica, and they have different varieties of those as well. So they're, you know, the different varieties have, you know, minimal, differences genetically. You know, there can be quite a bit of variation, but they're different. You know, they're still the same species, but Robusta is a completely different species.
Now, what's the purpose of growing it in shade if everyone else is growing it in full sun?
The thing is that the when you have more sun, it coffee genetically grew or is genetically designed to grow under shade. But when you have more sun, you can produce more coffee out of the tree, but you have to fertilize it more. You have to take care of the soil more. And the other thing that they do it like that is because they harvest everything with machines. So they have this machine that goes and shakes the coffee trees, and the little cherries fall down and the machine picks it up and everything. Here in El Salvador, we harvest everything by grain. If you buy coffee from El Salvador, every single one of the coffee beans has been picked by hand and put in a bag.
Now, would that be a good innovation for you to be able to adapt that technique of finding a machine to be able to do it, or do you prefer to hand pick it?
It has to deal with, so the reason why they do it with machines is they get flat ground. Here in El Salvador, it's very difficult to have a lot of land that's flat. And you would have to start, you know, investing a lot of money into like flattening. You know, have you seen in like the rice growing regions that they have this like flat things around the mountains that look like, you know, somebody drew lines on the mountains to flatten the mountains? Do we have to do that? And that takes a lot of money, a lot of money. So, you know, there's been some experiments of having machinery being used here, but because the land is so rugged that, you know, you can't economically, I think, physically do it.
Now, is there anybody that's working on like trying to find a better way to be able to, or at least be able to harvest easier or make your guys' job a little bit easier? Because, I mean, I think we talked about in the first episode, the amount of work that you do is, I mean, it's a lot. Compared to how a lot of other things have kind of industry processed it a lot faster. And that seems to be the one that we're buying off of every single giant industry, Maxwell House or Folgers. You know, their process is probably a lot easier because they don't have to worry about all the stuff that you kind of have to worry about when it comes to harvesting or even producing. You would think that there would be an easier method. We just got to find out what's the good template for your land.
And I think that a lot of it, for our country, that it's lacking. I think that, you know, there is a lot of things have to be implemented to make coffee or the production of coffee better. You know, it has to deal with the land. You know, the land has been, you know, we haven't rotated our crops because coffee, you can leave a coffee tree in the ground for 30 years. So, you know, a lot of the soil needs to be, you know, put a lot of back of the organ of the microorganisms that help the soil. We have a lot of problems with the soil being too acid. So the tree can't absorb the nutrients. So that we have to deal with that. We have to deal with climate change. We have to deal with leaf rust as well. So we talked last time about this, you know, this fungus that we have when it starts raining. That affects a lot with the trees. You had to talk a lot about, you know, the genetic research material that we have here. So getting better coffee seeds. We have to talk a lot about like the logistics and the way coffee is shipped, coffee is moved around the country. So I think, you know, it's, you know, you won't reach what you're thinking about of making coffee more efficient in El Salvador if you don't tackle it from every side.
Now, how much do you, out of like a haul, how much do you lose compared to how much you gain?
How much do I lose in?
Like when you sell a whole year's worth, when you're going to do your sale. Now, how much do you gain from it? And how much do you lose, like plant wise? Are you losing a couple of plants? Are you losing out of like the whole batch? Is it one fourth of it, or is it more than half?
I mean, the plants can actually live for a long time. So renovation projects are scarce. You know, we do have renovation projects that we have been going on, but it's because we bought those, we bought farms and they were abandoned. So we had those, but you know, you can leave a coffee plant in the ground for around 20 years and it'll still be good. You have to manage it. And by me, by that is you have to cut the branches that are dead. You have to, you know, just take care of it, but it'll last for a long time.
When do you know that you have to, like, one of the plants that you are probably going to be using, how do you know if it's bad? Like, do you ever get a subtle tell that, like, maybe this coffee is not good?
So as far as taste wise or as far as production wise, because
production wise, like if you're going to do a harvest, you notice one of the trees looks a little funky, like this tree's kind of fucked up. What do I do? It's like something's wrong with it.
Well, I mean, one of the things you always start looking by the root. So always if what's up there in the air doesn't look good, I mean, most of the times there's something going on with the root. So you go there and dig out. If it's just one plant, I dig it out and look at it. There's a couple of things that can be bad if you find it in one plant. But usually if it's just one plant, it's not a big problem. If it's a plot of plants that are going bad, there's several plants around it, and think you might start getting worried about, you know, what is going on. And then you look at it, and I mean, you can we call it resepa, which is you prune the tree close to the ground, and then if it starts blooming again, you know, the next year, if it starts growing, you know, leaves and branches the next year, then things are on the root are going well. You know, trees, like people, they get old, right? So, you know, every once in a while you have to prune it, and then you have an advantage now because you have the roots of the mature plant, but you are growing branches and leaves that are young. Yeah. So you can do
I was wondering how you mentioned the acid in the soil. So I was wondering, how do you deal with something like that? That's got to affect the coffee in some type of way.
Yeah, I mean, the soil here in El Salvador, definitely, I mean, climate change has definitely hurt us, you know, with the coffee producing regions here in El Salvador. And one of the biggest things that I think that are hurting us as far as, you know, what has changed as being in how many bags of coffee you get per bags of cherry. So coffee, you harvest it, it's a cherry, and then you have to dry it, and then you have another industrial process it, and then you have this raw material that you put in your coffee roaster, right? So because of the changes in climate, because of the changes in the soil, because of, you know, everything that's been going on, we've been getting less and less of that ready to put on your roaster a grain from the same amount of cherries.
First of all, what you said, ready to put on your roaster, that needs to be on the front of your bag, ready to put on your roaster. See, I can't even wrap my head around the amount of, like, work and how much. I guess you get used to it after the years and years that you've been doing it. You start to develop a fine process for it. But I mean, just the explanation of it, there's so many factors that go into it. But for you, it's probably second knowledge because you've just done it for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 15 years. I started working I lived in the farm when I was a little kid. I learned how to walk in the farm and everything. So, you know, for me, I feel weird in the city at some points. But you know, I've been working not professionally, but my dad gave me work at the farm since I was 15, doing every job at the farm. So when you've been working for something for so long, it's almost, you know, very second nature. So, you know, when we started talking about me diversifying into other things, it's so weird to start learning about stuff when you're so old. I mean, it's good, but, you know, because I've been, you know, that sense of, okay, I'm going to start doing this and I feel lost because I don't know where to start. It's something that I, you know, I haven't had for a long, long time, even in college, because, you know, you go to university, you know how to study. You've been through you know, high school, right? And so you know how to, you know, study for an exam. At least I hope everyone that goes to college does. But that feeling of, you know, I'm lost. I want to do this, but I don't know where to start. You know, it's something that after being in an industry for such a long time, you know, I think it's been challenging to manage.
Now, is there a bit of like interest, or is it more fear of trying to start something new? Like being afraid that you might not be as good as it, because there might be that little glimmer of hope that you actually are better than you were with coffee.
Hopefully, yeah, you know, we like to say that, you know, motivation comes from positive thinking, but desperation is a big motivation.
Yeah.
If you get desperate, I mean, you'll start working on things. So I do believe in taking negative emotion and you know, doing something positive with it. Definitely discipline is the best thing that you can have, because, you know, your motivation comes and goes. You know, I woke up motivated one day and the next day I feel like crap. So, you know, if you have discipline in your life, then it doesn't matter, because the motivation comes and goes. But if you have discipline, I think you can at least make an honest promise to yourself about what's going to be at the end of that path.
Well, the biggest challenge, I think, for a lot of people is trying to make sure that, like you were saying, don't have all your eggs in one basket. But at the same time, maybe that's also a good process too, is being able mm-hmm. to build up something so much. I mean, it's good to expand out into another category as long as it's not taking mm-hmm. away all the time and energy needed to produce the main producer, the main income mm-hmm. source. Because how many people are ready to take that gamble? I mean, you might be a gambling man, but that risk of losing everything is a big one, man. I mean, that's the sensitive it is with the agricultural industry. I think that's why it sucks so much that a lot of people are hurting, especially just with losing a lot of their crops. You know, even if they are like, hey, more money for you, it is an overall thing of like, damn, that would suck if that happened to me. I mean, it's not a easy going thing like trying to go to your job. You know, when you go to your job in the States, for instance, like my job, for instance, my gym's always going to be there until it ends up selling or something. But I know that's a solidified thing for as long as I want to be there. Coffee, you wake up one day and your farm's gone. You know, that's a sensitive yeah. thing, a scary aspect.
I mean, the thing is, you got to do is, I think for me, I have conviction just because everything that I've been through, that, you know, even though if I wake up today or tomorrow and the farm is gone, you know, I'll find something to do and I'll still put the meat on
grow
the table,
tobacco
right?
Sell me some cigars.
Well, we can do that. I mean, my dad always used to say that, okay, yeah, agriculture sucks because of that, but, you know, even though if your farm burns down, you still have the land. If a meteorite falls on your farm, you still have a hole and you can do something with it. So, you know, you there's still ways you can get ahead. I mean, it's definitely tough because, you know, it's easy to, you know, be motivated and think about what's to do next and think about new projects when you have your bills paid, you're healthy, when your family's okay, when your business is going okay. But it's a different thing to be motivated and want to do new things and expand in something when life has you on your knees, man. That's very tough. So, you know, having that hunger when you're beaten down, it's something that's practiced. My dad actually lost everything twice. So the first time he lost it was with his dad, with my grandpa, that, you know, they lost everything because of bad business. So, and they built it back again. And then here in El Salvador, we had what it was called an agrarian reform. So it was intended to provide land and provide means of production to those that were less fortunate. So what the government was really, they walked in with, you know, military people into the farm and they just took everything from you. I mean, they the government assigned a random number of an area of land and heads of cattle and things like that. It was in the 70s that you could have. And if you had more than that, that belonged to the government. So, and, you know, it caught them all by surprise. My dad had this like old wheelies, not wheelies, but, you know, a Jeep to go to his farm. And he drove to the farm when he was taken over by these people from the government. And they said, and well, they, you know, what are you going to do? He had to, you know, be like, okay, take it. And they actually took his Jeep too, because he drove into the farm with the Jeep. So now they told him it belonged to the government.
I would have fucking punched somebody in the face, man. That no, yeah, no, so, that's so fucked, man.
Yeah. The agrarian reform here in El Salvador was not a good thing, man. Because, you know, I understand the purpose of it behind it, that it was to redistribute, you know, this immense amount of wealth that was concentrated. But the problem is they gave all the land to you know, people that, you know, didn't know how to work it, and they didn't give them guidance. So, you know, a lot of those lands ended up abandoned and not being used. So it was a problem.
It's like you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah.
It's like, so, imagine giving a bunch of people the tools and saying, here you go, give you what you want, but then don't give them the resources or ability to be able to help them learn. I mean, that's the whole thing, is like, everything's a learning process. I mean, if anything, one day you're going to pass it down your family line, you know, your farm and everything, they're going to take over and they're going to find a different way of going towards it. I guess, dude, it's a good start to try and dip your hands into something else. But I mean, I feel like, much like me, you're the type of person that, like, if you get, like, if you sit down, if you relax, it makes it even worse when you have to go back. So it's just best to keep the process going, you know, no days off, just going for it.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been trying to expand a lot more with, you know, with roasted coffee. I have my roasted coffee brand and everything that I'm working on right now. I have my roaster here at home. So, and thankfully I've got some good clients over here. So hopefully that can be another way that, you know, I can help support and, you know, my coffee plantation, and help spread, you know, the word about the how good our coffee is.
Are you looking for more marketing options? Like, I know you were taking those videos for a while. At least you sent me a glimpse of it. Are you looking for better marketing opportunities when it comes to like getting on TV or trying to save up for better branding?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely doing that. I mean, I've been definitely working social media a lot more, which is really powerful. And then, you know, hopefully I can get in front of TV and talk about, you know, not just my farm, but I'd like all the coffee from El Salvador. I mean, definitely anything that helps spread the word about, you know, coffee and coffee from El Salvador, because that's one of the things we have to work on as a country as a whole, is that, you know, when you ask someone, let's say from America, just tell me where coffee is grown.
Brazil.
Very few people will tell you El Salvador. Only if they're really into coffee or they're in the coffee industry, they'll talk about El Salvador. So, you know, obviously Brazil, everybody knows Café de Colombia. So, but, you know, as a country, we have to work on our image to get ourselves out there. So it's not just me, like with my farm, that I need more, you know, marketing and more ways to get, you know, that story and to tell that story, but, you know, as a country as well.
Yeah, they somehow slipped in on the radar. When you think of like good coffee, everyone thinks of Colombia or Brazil or some over the seas place. But I guess they must have slipped it in at the right time, like maybe back in the day when the marketing was like headed towards that. Like, I mean, if anything, with Brazil going through their frost, they're probably going to get a lot of media attention, but then it's going to be looked to the other producers like yourself too. So hopefully some news teams or something comes down in the area to focus on the people that are trying to get us still the coffee that we need. You know, that was a big scare. I know everybody was praying for that guy who was on the forklift or the whatever it was, trying to get the fucking boat out of the middle of the channel all by himself. And nobody even remembers his name. They were rooting him on for weeks.
That was crazy, man. I don't know. Like, have you seen that little bit in Austin Powers where he's backing and going up in front of
his dad. Yes, yes, yes,
yes. It was like the exact same thing. I don't know what happened, but you know, that really put us in a pinch. I mean, everyone.
I don't even think you understand, like, when you slip, like, so when something like that happens, we don't understand the capacity that has to fuck up so much stuff. Like, that was the big, I knew people that were going to the store buying coffee, like, bulk. Like, I mean, spending like $60 on giant things of coffee. Like, we're not going to have coffee for months. I'm like, I don't think he's going to be stuck there for months. Someone's going to blow up that ship or someone's going to help that guy get out.
Yeah, well, I don't want to get started on the toilet paper wars that, you know, that we had.
That was ridiculous as hell, man. I don't even understand what people had it for months. I think now people are starting to run out of the toilet paper that they stocked up with in like January.
Oh, my God, man. That and hand sanitizer, you know.
I mean, good marketing for those prices that went all the way up, but then it's like, what the hell? Like, it happened with our meat thing too. I think the last time we were talking, we got our stimulus checks, and then the meat, well, there's a meat scare, so everyone went to the store and bought all the red meat, and there was no red meat available. I'm like, I'm so happy that it's not with cans of tuna, because that's all I eat. So I'm like, nobody's I'm perfectly fine, everybody else is worrying. But I just checked the CDC website recently, and I was looking through, like, trying to see, like, what are they saying about the virus now. But I didn't realize how many, like, salmonella poisonings are happening with a lot of these farms down in the States. Like, there's a lot, like, they're running out of certain types of lettuce, certain types of spinach, certain types of produce that are used for salads and stuff like that. I'm like, you're not incentivizing anybody to eat healthy if you're going to keep telling them they're going to get salmonella on a salad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the balance of our life is, you can break it really easily. And I think that's one of the things that all this, you know, the coronavirus and the lockdowns and everything has taught us is, you know, we are walking on a rope, and it's pretty easy to fall.
Now, when you were in, did you guys have lockdown over there?
You know, Salvador, yeah, we had a pretty strict lockdown. You couldn't, you know, walk out the door. You had people from the military, you know, you had to have a letter from your employer saying that you worked in an essential need. Like for us, for agriculture, we could go out, you know, my workers could go out and work. And I made letters for them and everything, but the other people, if like you sold shoes, you couldn't go out and open your store and everything. And, you know, it was pretty strict down here. And you know, they put people in like quarantine places if you were not doing what they say and things like that. So
I was curious, because I was like, how could you get to your farm if you were on lockdown too? So thank God they let you go out there and still be able to produce.
Yeah, well, agriculture was you know, we need food, so everything that was related with agriculture, if you sold agricultural products, if you sold like fertilizer and stuff like that, you could keep open. But you know, if there was, you know, everything else shut down. So, and it was pretty tough with a lot of people, but because a lot of our economy depends on the informal market. So the people that are in the market that they sell, you know, whatever, it's like everything, right? So it was pretty tough for them staying home and not being able to sell, you know. So I think that's contributing to the inflation now that, you know, we're seeing everything is going up in price. So, and I think that's one of the things that scare me a lot. I think the projections, I think just for America, I think it's 5% inflation.
Well, yeah, so, gas is $3 right now. And it's like, people are saying that they were going to complain. I was like, yeah, but they own it. So it's like, you need to drive your car. It's kind of like if you raise the price of food or water, if everybody raises it up a dollar. Like, I talk about the cable companies, like, America has rules set in place so that there's no monopolies or anything that's controlling the whole market. But all the cable companies, they're all owned like in a same group. When one raises their prices, they all raise their prices. When one lowers their prices, they all lower their prices, and no one goes outside the normal. They all work on the same thing. So I'm like, that's a slow monopoly. We have way more of that because people are going to pay just to make sure that their routine doesn't get messed up. I was like, hopefully the one thing we would pull out of the pandemic was that your routine is as fragile as like anything. So try and find a way to adapt and survive.
Well, with cable TV, I like to quote the Red Hot Chili Peppers, just throw away your television.
Yes. Bravo. That's probably one of my favorite songs besides Zephyr.
Yeah. So, no, I think, we spend too much time in front of TV. So it's better to go do something else. So I think it's more productive.
Better to burn out than fade away.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it's spend too much time in front of it, and not a lot of the things that are on TV are, are good. And if you want to spend some time with someone watching TV, there's the paid services online that you can get, and you can choose what you want to watch and spend some time chilling with your favorite person.
Well, you've given me enough of your time, man. I really appreciate you coming back on the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's always great to spend some time with you and talking to your viewers. Go out there, get some good coffee, learn about coffee. Life is too short to drink bad coffee, man.
Life is too short to drink bad coffee, indeed. Now, where can people find you at?
My Instagram handle is Coffea Arabica Growers for the farm. We also have now a page for roasted coffee, which is Castello Coffee, which is Castello Coffee. So I'll send those over to you as well, so you can share them with your crowd. So but we're still gonna be working here with coffee for a long time. So, and if anyone's here, you or your viewers are here in El Salvador, they want to go out there, learn more about coffee, check out the farms, they can hit me up and we'll get something going on.
I'll make sure I link everything in the description. Thanks for listening to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast with the man with the best mustache in the business.
Thanks, guys. See you.